and welcome to this Lighthouse Church podcast, where you can catch up on our talks from Sunday gatherings. We're a church at East Lothian, seeking to follow Jesus, build community, and make a difference.
Okay, morning church. So the first one another we're looking at is love one another. So we're going to look at the verses from John 13, 34 to 35. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. There's a bit of repetition going on there. I think he's really trying to say something. So we first meet the disciple John, who was the person who wrote these words, as a young fisherman, working with his dad and his brothers in a very male-dominated environment, tough environment, working in all weathers. We also see that perhaps he has a little bit of a temper sometimes. Do you remember when they visited a town and they weren't welcomed? And John says, "Shall we call down fire from heaven on them?" And it's like, "No, calm down, John." And perhaps some pride issues as well. So him and his brother James want to have the places of honour next to Jesus. But after spending 3 years alongside Jesus, much of what John chooses to write about is love. So these verses are for everyone, and they're probably more challenging than they first appear as well. So the first words are, a new command I give you. So that's Jesus saying, a new command. Command is a strong word, isn't it? This isn't an optional, warm, fuzzy extra as far as Jesus is concerned, but something he insists his followers should do. When the Pharisees, who were the religious leaders at the time, are trying to test him, they ask Jesus, "Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses?" Jesus replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments." Some people, I think, view Christianity as a religion of rules, a list of do's and don'ts. But if we truly follow these two commandments, to fully love God and to love other people as much as ourselves, then everything else, he says, every other rule and law in the Bible will naturally fall in place, and we'll find ourselves obeying other laws without even thinking about it. As I was reading through it, though, it does feel like a little bit of an anomaly that Jesus says this is a new command when he's quoted the law of Moses from Leviticus, so the law being the way that God told his people to live, and this was 1,400 years before Jesus was born. And John, when he writes his second letter, says, "I'm not writing you a new command, but one we've had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another." So why does Jesus specifically say that this is a new command then? The second phrase in the verses that we read at the start are, "As I have loved you, love one another." As Jesus has loved us. Wow, that kind of takes it up a notch. So while simplifying the whole law into two commandments to help us maybe understand them better, he doesn't want to make it easier for us. It's too important. In fact, Jesus frequently steps things up a level. So the law says, do not murder, in the Ten Commandments. But Jesus says, if you are angry with your brother, you're subject to judgment. The law said, love your neighbor. So just a little aside, the law was given when the Israelites were wandering in the desert. And there were actually instructions for how they were to camp. So this was after the Exodus from Egypt and before they entered the Promised Land when they were wandering around. They were told the places to camp. So they camped in their own tribe, and they always had the same tribe on either side of each other. So, for example, Judah was always next to Zebulun and Issachar, and Reuben always had Gad on one side and Simeon on the other. So perhaps they could be forgiven a fairly narrow view of who their neighbour was. But Jesus wasn't going to let them get away with that, though. He wanted to let them know that he loves the whole world. Everyone is included in that love. In the parable he tells of the Good Samaritan, he shows that the person who was the good neighbour was the one that the Jews probably would have least expected, the people they tried hard to avoid. Not only that, but this Samaritan goes above and beyond. Not only does he notice the injured man on the side of the road and take care of his immediate needs with some first aid, but he then takes him to an inn and he pays for his stay. He then goes back again later to check on him and offers to pay for any additional expenses that have been incurred. So this is out of the comfort zone, sacrificial compassion and mercy towards someone who may not have deserved it. And just to make sure his point is fully made, Jesus doesn't stop at love your neighbour. He goes on, and in Matthew 5, 43 to 48, it says, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbour and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." Wow. We get a beautiful description of God's perfect love in 1 Corinthians 13. So you often hear this at weddings when we're talking about love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 says, "Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, it does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails." Beautiful, isn't it? Not easy, but beautiful. I think that's how we would like to be loved, isn't it? It feels good to hear those words. Strangely enough, though, we're not perfect. Sorry to disappoint anyone, but I don't think there's anyone here who is perfect. And showing love is an area that I think we can always grow in. We know that Jesus laid down his life for us. So I think, you know, we've got a bit of room to grow to get to Jesus' standard of love. Even within a church context, let alone our enemies, it can sometimes be difficult to love well. There's barriers to doing that. So it might be busyness or tiredness. And if we're being honest, sometimes it's perhaps easiest just to stay in our comfort zone and to not make the effort. But thankfully, whenever Jesus gives a command, we see this in all the different commands that he makes. He doesn't expect us to complete it in our own strength. Galatians 5:22 lists the fruit of the Holy Spirit, starting with love. And when we let the Spirit fill us, not only can we feel God's love, his joy, his peace, but he grows that fruit in us so that it overflows and that the people around us can experience that as well. So with God working in us, the way we love others can begin to look a bit more like God's perfect love. So the third love one another in those verses at the start is the result of that. So a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So this is Jesus talking to his disciples. He wants his followers to set the example by first loving each other, one another, in the high standard that he's modelled. So let's get practical. How do we, as God's followers today, Jesus' followers, how do we go about loving each other on a practical level? I'm so grateful that I'm part of this church where I can see love in action. And I'm confident that if you've been here any length of time, that you will have received a warm welcome from people, that people will have stopped with you and listened and prayed. You will have been served in some way. Chances are high that someone's made you a meal at some point, maybe if you've welcomed a newborn, or you've been ill, or you've just enjoyed hospitality in someone's home. I know that people have shown love by giving gifts, by giving lifts, offering babysitting, or volunteering on a team. And I'm sure you can think of so many other ways as well. So maybe you've noticed when someone needs a hug, or you can give an encouraging word to someone. And that is evident already in this church, and I love that. I know that when we had our children, the church we were part of then provided meals for us. And I was so grateful for that. And I remember one time when a meal was delivered, it was very early days and we had the community midwife visiting and checking on our new tiny little Lauren. And she was really moved that our church friends would do that for us, that they would come and they would bring us a meal so we didn't have to worry about doing that when we were so tired at the time. I've grown up in church all my life, and so this sort of thing has been fairly normal for me, but it isn't for everyone. So I had a friend, one of my daughter's friend's mums, who had just had a second baby, and we used to see each other in the school playground picking up our children. And I offered to take her a meal. I think she was slightly offended. and she politely declined, saying that her partner was off work and they could cope. Church, I hope you know that it's okay to accept help when you need it. And it might feel slightly vulnerable to do that, to let someone help you. But just understand that it's being offered out of love. It's not a, oh, they can't cope, we better do something about it. So yeah, it's okay to accept help. Hebrews 10:24 says, spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Again, I'm so grateful to have been around people that have done this for me. So I've just got some examples, just some stories of where we've received love in the past, perhaps a little bit creatively, to give you some ideas and to spur you on to thinking how you can do that too. So our second daughter decided that after school, she wanted to show love by going on a mission trip and serving people in different parts of the world. But to do that, she needed to raise an awful lot of money to get away. And so she received love by lots of people giving donations to her. But one person in the church, who was a maths teacher at the local school, in his spare time, created escape rooms, designed them and built them. And he offered to build one specifically for Sophie. And it was lovely. He spent time with her. He found out what her interests were and designed this incredible escape room, which had elements of music puzzles and travel and the Bible thrown in there as well. And it meant, and he then advertised it to the people that used to go and do his escape rooms. So it meant that we had all of these teams come and pay to have a go at this escape room. And I think that raised over £1,500 towards her trip away. It's just such a creative and way to show love and to give his time towards that, and really helped her on her trip. And the fact that she went away and did this, her college tutor realised that it was a big thing as well and invited her back to teach the class that would have been up, like the year below her, after she'd gone away on her trip to tell them what she'd done, what she was able to do. So it gets noticed. When there is this kind of love, it is noticed by other people. When we were leaving Guernsey, we sold our house 6 weeks before we moved, which meant that we couldn't all stay together as a family of five. We had to sort of break off into ones and twos to stay with other people. And one couple in the church realised that we were missing out on family time. And they offered their home to us, that we could just cook a meal in their home. They went out for the evening and they just let us use their house, cook in their kitchen, use their lounge, sit on their sofas, be in their garden as a family of five. And it was wonderful. And it was just a slightly more creative way of just having that time, just the five of us, rather than someone hosting us. So lots of ways in which we can do this for each other, we can show love. Having said all of this, I just want to add a little kind of caution, a little kind of safety net. I don't think we should be walkovers saying yes to absolutely anything and everything. Much as it is really good to be challenged out of our comfort zone, it's also good to have boundaries. And sometimes it's okay to say no when we need to prioritise family time or time alone with God. And we can protect that, and that's okay. If it's hard to know where that boundary lies and what the difference is, we need to allow the Spirit's prompting to lead us to either step up and really show love where he's asking us to, or to say no, and that's okay. So just these verses one more time. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. We're all called, commanded even, to love one another, not just the people who are naturally good at it. We need to realise that the bar is set high and aim to love Jesus as he loved us. And as we do, people around will notice. Christians don't have the monopoly on love. I remember someone telling me when I was feeling a little bit down at one point, because I just thought, I'm not kind enough as a Christian. I've got friends who are so much kinder than me. And my friend said, yeah, but we don't have the monopoly on it. Other people can be kind and love too. I was just thinking of a neighbour of ours that we'd been chatting to, who volunteers for a charity and helps her friends with food and with meals and things. And that's great. But I think we need to be known as a people of love. That needs to be something that, that just shines out so much, that when we love to the extreme, we love how Jesus loves us, that's when people notice. And when they do notice, we can be ready to say that we can love because Jesus loved us first. We're following his example. So I've got a few questions to think about this going forward, a little bit of application homework. They are quite personal, so they're not so much to discuss around the table. They're ones to take away and think about. So the disciple John grew in love as he spent time with Jesus. Try reading 1 Corinthians 13, 4 to 8, substituting I for love. So, for example, I am patient, I am kind, I do not envy, and so forth. How does that feel? Are there some phrases that feel uncomfortable and you need to allow God to help you in that? And just let God speak to you. Are there creative ways that you can love people? And just, yeah, see what he says. And also just to spend some time praying. So Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. But just a little challenge to pray for someone who God prompts you to pray for this week from the church, and also someone outside of the church or a country or someone that you might not feel they're in the category of enemy, but maybe someone you don't particularly like or drawn to, but just pray for them because they still need God's love. And I've got just, if anyone wants to dig a bit deeper, I've got some questions printed out as well that can be discussed within communities, or just if you want to study a little bit further. And I've got some printouts if anyone wants to take those. But for now, let's remember that first command as well, to love God with all our hearts, all our minds, all our soul, all our strength. And let's come into his presence and love him as we worship, and just experience his love for us, so that he can fill us and send us out to love one another well. If you'd like to stand, we're going to worship again.